What is going on, guys? As we all know, the Royal Rumble just finished 2 days ago. I'm here with Giancarlo Aulino. Anthony Piniello is currently MIA. Hopefully he comes back. But I'm going to start this off just like the match was short and sweet. This is going to be probably a shorter podcast, which we all, you know, some people they like, some people they don't. I'll ask my boy Aulino here. Because we all know that he's a big Goldberg fan. Goldberg versus Drew McIntyre opening the Royal Rumble. What were your initial thoughts on the match? Did it disappoint? Did it exceed your expectations? What was the overall... What did you get out of this? 2 minutes.
Yeah, short and sweet. I thought it was like a car crash. Just throw everything you got at each other and... wrap it up. Goldberg's age and the way he comes down to the ring with the fireworks and everything, he's all hype. So for what it was, I thought it was good. I thought it was fine. Got the job done, got the message out. It made me believe that because he started the show with it, I actually thought Goldberg might win, and then it would set up Drew to come in later on, or maybe even looked at as an underdog because he got attacked beforehand. He got back in the ring and still managed to regroup, get the job done. So I like that Drew retained the title. He looked good in it, and Goldberg didn't hurt himself too much. Just the jackhammer was a little bit iffy, but other than that, it was the best you can get, I guess, from Goldberg at this stage in his career. So I was fine with it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I did like the pre-match attack, and then Drew, you know, holding his ribs, selling that, you know, Goldberg, it doesn't matter what age he is, he's going to be the favorite every time he's in a match. So this was no different, even though the year Drew McIntyre's had. He was still looked at as the underdog. I was saying to Collab last night, it doesn't matter like how great of a reign you have. When you're going up against guys like Brock Lesnar and Goldberg, there's just this switch in your head that always thinks, well, it doesn't matter how good your reign has been because you're going up against a guy who rarely loses. So, I again, like you said, when Goldberg's music hit to start the show, I got a little nervous. I was like, okay, is this where Goldberg goes into WrestleMania as the WWE champion? Again, like you said last week, he has never won the WWE title, so it would make sense for WWE to hand that to him as well. But I was I wouldn't say I was pleasantly surprised, but I was surprised to see Drew McIntyre go over pretty damn clean and dominant. And I remember when he hit the Claymore kick and Goldberg kicked out, it was a big deal because no one's kicked out of the Claymore kick other than Brock Lesnar. So that was good to see. The jackhammer, you know, he did his best there. Drew McIntyre's like 285. So, but I like the thing that to me kind of pissed me off, and I don't know if this means that Goldberg is done, but like the stuff that happened after the match where he, you know, he's hugging Drew, and I don't know if you saw, but Drew was basically laughing at Goldberg after the match. Like he was smiling, like kind of, and then Goldberg's just huffing and puffing. He looks exhausted. You know, he was limping, leaving the ring. So I don't know. I guess I'll ask you this next question. Do you think this is it for Goldberg? Because the way that, at least how I took it after the match, I think that might be it. I mean, maybe he has another WrestleMania match, but I think this might be his last run.
I actually thought one of them was turning heel. They were smiling too much. Goldberg went to the ropes, making me a little nervous. I was thinking he's going to spear him and then get on the microphone and say he's in the Rumble later that night. So I was getting a little worried there. But true, then the way they like sold it, like Goldberg getting out the ring, I thought, okay, maybe someone's going to come out from the back and attack him like a Sheamus and set something up for the Rumble. So the whole time that was happening, I was just thinking that Goldberg was going to be in the Rumble and they were going to try and set something up. So I was actually surprised that he just went off and they went to the next segment, because I think they had an opportunity there. It could have been even someone like a Dolph Ziggler just super kick him and set something up for the next pay-per-view. He can add another match with Goldberg. So I'm surprised they didn't do anything with him after that.
Yeah, I agree with that there. I really wasn't expecting Goldberg to be in the Royal Rumble. I don't see him doing double duty at his age now, but I mean, it would have been something special, wouldn't it? I mean, like he goes out, he loses, plays the respect card. Spears, Drew officially turns mega heel there, like he's full on heel, and then says, I'm going to be in the Royal Rumble. And then that is where fans like me, you, Pinello, and all these other guys that are, you know, diehard wrestling fans, they start to worry and their palms start to get a little sweaty. And I think that would have been unique. It would have been different, but I'm kind of glad that it went out. They went out the way that it, they did. And like I said, Drew McIntyre has had probably one of the best years that I can remember in a long time from a WWE champion. I mean, I guess I'll ask this question too. Like, when you look at Drew McIntyre's WWE title reign the last 5 years, who would you compare his run to? Because to me, I don't know, man. He might have the best run since, I want to say, like CM Punk in 2013 or 2011 to 2013.
Oh yeah, he's had a great reign. It's just a little tough because they're in the Thunderdome and you can't really hear the crowd pop. Like when he beat Brock Lesnar, that was supposed to be like the big deal for him, and they didn't have the stadium for that. So I think right now it's probably the best we can get out of that. He got his second reign after he beat Randy. So it shows that maybe something's working there, that they feel confident in giving him another reign, another long one. And I don't know. I like the CM Punk one. I think even if you go further along that, maybe like a Kevin Owens when he had the Universal title, and right when he won it, it was that big moment and they ended up doing a lot for it. But then Goldberg came along, so this was kind of similar to that. So I'll go Kevin Owens' Universal title reign for that one.
I like that. I was saying as well to collab, like the two title runs that we've been getting right now from Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre, like they've been spot on, and the way they've been booked has been brilliant. I would say about 2 years ago, I would never ever anticipate both of these guys switching roles, especially Roman being a top heel and Drew being a top face. But they're making it work, and I don't see Drew McIntyre turning heel even if Edge were to challenge him. A lot of people are saying, well, it has to happen. You can't do a face versus face. I mean, it's been done before, the face versus face. And I feel like, seeing as there would be if there would be fans, it would be limited. So if there were limited fans, I think it would work, a face versus face. You have Edge versus Drew McIntyre. I don't see no harm in that. But moving on, we'll talk a little bit more about Edge later. Sasha Banks versus Carmella for the SmackDown Women's Championship. This was 10 minutes. This was actually longer than expected. Unfortunately, in both our eyes, we all knew it was predictable. But I'll ask this question. What do you think is actually next for Carmella moving forward?
Yeah, this one was more of the predictable matches on the card. I don't think they were going to give Carmella the title. I think they see Sasha Banks going on, and later, like with the Rumble, they're going to build off that, especially after Bayley had the title for so long. So I think Carmella might be looking at women's tag division. Maybe her and Bayley team up and go after the titles. So I don't see her challenging for the title for a while, but I thought this was good in reintroducing her character, getting herself over again in this new role. So even though she lost in this big match, I think it's probably going to be the best thing for her going forward.
Yeah, I agree there. I mean, Sasha Banks, she's done a great job with the SmackDown Women's title. Not as good of a job as Bayley has, but her run is just getting started. I think she's going to feud with Bianca Belair. That's just me. But this moving, we're going to move on now to the Women's Royal Rumble. This is the fourth annual for the women. This one to me was a little bit off. I mean, I think out of all the four, I think this might be the worst one. Just based off of timing, based off of even the people in it, I thought some of the surprise entrants were very underwhelming for me. Like you had like Jillian Hall coming in, like it was funny, but like come on, like you really couldn't put anybody else in there. Another person that actually got released not too long ago and made her return was Alicia Fox in the Women's Royal Rumble. That was pretty funny. But what were your initial thoughts on this Royal Rumble?
Yeah, I'm with you. It was okay. I think they've had better ones before, but like Victoria, that was an interesting surprise. Alicia Fox, even though she was released, her coming back with R-Truth there. They had that little back and forth. That was pretty funny. But yeah, overall, they didn't really have anything where other than the NXT stars that were going to really make a name, I think they should have utilized like free agency, like Taya Valkyrie, brought her in, be that surprise entrant, like someone you're going to actually sign going forward. I thought they could have utilized something like that. So that's the only thing I think was really missing, like a big free agent name coming in and making noise and like getting some excitement in their division on SmackDown or even Raw, because like going forward, it's the same four really challenging for the title. So you have Charlotte, Asuka, Bayley in the mix, and then Sasha's a champ. So I think they need some fresh blood, and would have been a best time for a free agent coming in.
I agree there as well. I really would have loved to have seen the girl, of course, the big one from TNA. You know, I think she would have absolutely made this match oh so better. And even like you look at like Shotzi Blackheart coming in, like I thought she was gonna do a little bit more. Toni Storm had her spots, but this, at least in this Royal Rumble, to me, it was literally only about two people for the most part, two to three people. And that was the final three. Bianca Belair, she had a great run in this Rumble. Rhea Ripley actually looked like probably the most dominant out of any person on the roster. Kudos to WWE for continuously building Rhea Ripley up as a threat, because when she lost to Charlotte last year, I thought that that really was going to affect her long term. I wasn't really worried about her going back down to NXT, but when you lose that title to Charlotte Flair, it's just like, what the hell is next for you? You didn't even get called up afterwards. So I feel like with this performance from Rhea Ripley, I would assume that she is now on the main roster full time, because she was the best woman, I think, in this match other than Bianca Belair. Naomi actually making a return at number two, lasting 47 minutes. She was also, for me, she looks really good, man. Like, I know a lot of people, they don't necessarily enjoy watching Naomi. They think she's boring. They think she's bland, the character. It's getting kind of old quickly with the neon lights and dancing. But I thought Naomi actually was probably one of the biggest surprises for me in this match. She was amazing. She was getting a lot of offense in on Bayley, on Belair, on Toni Storm at times. So I thought Naomi was probably the biggest surprise for me when you think of booked. It's like she was in it for 47 minutes. Everybody else, I think, was in for an average of like 7 minutes. But I gotta ask this, because like this really pissed me off. Alexa Bliss being in it for only 1 minute. You knew that I actually had her winning this match. Why do you think they went with that approach with Alexa Bliss in this match?
Yeah, it's kind of disappointing too when you think about it, because just on Raw, she dominated the champion like nothing. And in the Rumble, she comes out as a Firefly Funhouse character. So right there, I thought, okay, they're going to switch it like they did on Raw. The music's going to hit, and the Fiend character, the Fiend-like character that she has, and just dominate. And then after maybe someone takes advantage, like, or Randy Orton comes out and screws everything up and as a way to get revenge, and you see her get eliminated and go to Rhea Ripley, Bianca Belair. But I'm with you. I think that was a little disappointing. They dropped the ball on that. It would have been perfect, too, when you think about it, because Asuka's a champ, couldn't really do anything to her, and if she would have won the Royal Rumble, that would put the champion as an underdog. So I think that would have been a lot more interesting going into WrestleMania.
I think that part really made it gave me a real, real sour taste in my mouth. And another thing that absolutely pissed me off were the final three entrants, and they were so underwhelming. Like, Ember Moon coming back was great. I love seeing her back, but like, she was also in it for a minute because Nia Jax and Shayna came back in the ring and they cleaned house, like exactly how Kane and Big Show did it in 2014. Nia Jax coming out at 29, like, again, she was already showcased on the show in the pre-show, coming out at 29. That's supposed to be a big name. She comes out, she eliminates four people, and then gets eliminated quickly after that. So to me, it was pretty funny to see Lana eliminate Nia Jax. But other than that, I mean, there wasn't really a lot. And then, of course, at number 30, you want to talk about underwhelming. Natalya? You couldn't get anybody else at number 30? Really? You had to go with Natalya there? I don't know, man. Like, what are your for me, the final three entrants really, really lowered the grade. For me, the ending was great, but they really missed the mark on the last three entrants. No doubt about it.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like you look at when Nia Jax came out, it's like, oh my God, God help everyone else in this match now. All the people in the ring. I think she should have came out like 20, maybe a number 30. You could have had Rhea Ripley instead of had Rhea Ripley going like 39 minutes. You could have had her go like 10 in the last little bit there. It would have been a big surprise, but yeah, Nia Jax, Natalya's the last two. Little underwhelming. Even Natalya, I think she could have been a good veteran to have in the ring throughout. Maybe even have her in the top five coming in and just making sure everyone's on course there. But the ending was a little sloppy there when Nia Jax came out. Good thing it was only 2 minutes and 44 seconds before she got eliminated. But once she came out, you know, someone was getting hurt.
It's just as well, like when you look at like this match and like how many eliminations Shayna Baszler had, like it doesn't matter the eliminations because we all know that she's now a tag team champion. She's stuck in that division with Nia Jax. And we all thought that this girl would be like headlining pay-per-views with Charlotte, with Sasha, with Becky, with even Ronda Rousey at the time. And she's been in limbo for a while. So we all know that Shayna, you know, getting the eliminations, like last year, I think she had 8. Her and Bianca Belair last year dominated. But we all know Belair last year was not ready to take on that role. And then, of course, this year, Bianca Belair goes the distance. She ends up winning the Rumble. Number three is the statistically worst number to have in the Royal Rumble. And Bianca Belair proved that she can win. And I think out of all contestants in this match, I think she might actually deserve it the most. She's broken every record in NXT developmental. She's probably been the most improved. Even on the mic, she's amazing as a face or a heel. So you can go in that direction. But again, like the way that they finished this match was perfect. You have, so they booked Charlotte as a monster because they couldn't eliminate Charlotte just by themselves. They both had to team up and eliminate her. So that was good. And then you had the final two where you're looking at the future of the women's division. This is not a 35-year-old and another 35-year-old. This is Rhea Ripley, who I think is 26, and Bianca Belair, who I think is around 25. So these are this is the future of the women's division, and I'm glad that they actually showcased it at the end. I didn't really care who won. I was kind of rooting for Rhea Ripley. I thought she was maybe a little bit more ready. You know, she had that retribution in her mind. But, you know, Bianca Belair getting the win, I think that's amazing for not only for, you know, the whole MGK and for, you know, the Black Lives Matter, but for WWE in general, just focusing on the future. That's huge. And come on, Bianca Belair versus Sasha, that's going to be amazing.
Oh, for sure. That should be the one they go with. And I think Rhea Ripley, like, I wouldn't be surprised if we see her win the Chamber match and then go and challenge Asuka, because I think on Raw, they're a little thin on contenders right now, let's just say, because I think they're going to go in another direction with Charlotte. So that leaves Alexa Bliss, and right now Alexa Bliss is part of that whole Randy Orton, Bray Wyatt feud, so I think Rhea Ripley could be the one that comes up and takes the title in that big spot.
Can you see Rhea Ripley facing Charlotte at Mania? Because they kind of hinted at that too.
I think they might save that for like SummerSlam. I think this is going to be crazy, but I think they're going to go with Lacey Evans taking on Charlotte at WrestleMania. And I wouldn't be surprised if Ric Flair's involved and in Charlotte's corner, she gets the services of the Hulkster. Then you have Hulk Hogan on one side, Ric Flair on the other. They never had that moment at WrestleMania. They were supposed to, and that was 30 years ago at WrestleMania 7. So 30 years later, they finally get on the same card. It's in Tampa. That's Hulkster's stomping ground. I wouldn't be surprised if Vince McMahon made the call and called them up. And like, you know what? You and Ric Flair are going to be on the outside. You're going to get physical. Start flexing, doing those 10-pound dumbbells, and get ready.
That sounds like a perfect scenario there. I would like to see that too. But moving on, we got, of course, the Tribal Chief. He's defending his WWE title in a last man standing match against Kevin Owens. What were your initial thoughts on this match? I was actually pleasantly surprised. Kevin Owens got a shit ton of offense here. I thought this match exceeded expectations, honestly. Like, when we look back at Royal Rumble 2017, when they faced each other and you had Jericho in the Shark Tank. That match was awesome. I thought that was like peak Kevin Owens. He was on his game at that time. And then there it is here. Like, Kevin Owens, like we mentioned, he's a cockroach. He doesn't want to go away. And he's kind of been in limbo the last, like, 2 years. And I feel like he sees this opportunity here. He went all out. This match was amazing. Were you surprised with the outcome? And what do you think is next? I'll say it again. What do you think is next for the challenger, Kevin Owens, after this?
Yeah, I like this match. It was really good. I wasn't expecting it to go all around the arena like it did. We saw Kevin Owens turn into Mick Foley at times, getting thrown off the screens there through a table. He went through a table himself. He got run over by a golf cart. He just absorbed a lot of punishment, and he just kept on going. So they're kind of making that aura about him that no matter what the opponent does to him, he's just going to get back up and go for more. So I like the side of Kevin Owens. I still think he's a main event guy, even though after this, he probably won't be in the main event for the next few months because Roman's going to probably go on to other things. But I was surprised Jey Uso didn't get involved and Adam Pearce. I thought that would have been the perfect moment, especially with that thing with the referee and then the handcuffs. I thought that's when Jey Uso would come out and then Adam Pearce would even the odds and they could have one little one-off there. But for the most part, this was, it felt like it was a longer match than it was, but it was like, once it was over, you didn't go like, oh, that dragged on way too long. It should have been over 10 minutes ago. Like, it was one that you can sit back and actually enjoy. So I thought it was a really good match for both.
What were your thoughts on the ref counting to six and then screwing up and he realized it. And then it was like an awkward silence after. It was like one, two, three, four, five, six. And then just, you didn't hear anything after that. What were your thoughts on that? I thought that was absolutely hilarious. Even Kevin Owens, you know, I think he kind of realized, he's like, why are you at six already? Like, he's not even close. Paul Heyman's not even close to unlocking the handcuffs. Why are you at six? And yeah, the ref, he realized he probably got an earful from Vince. But yeah, that what were your thoughts on that when you first saw that? That was pretty dope.
I think he fucked up. He should have waited for Paul Heyman to give him the signal, like, we unlocked it, start counting now, instead of starting to count and expecting them to just already have it unlocked and ready to go. He should have waited till he knew one of the thing was actually in and the key was turned, everything was ready to go. So once he gets to like nine, he can just pull it off and make it look like they just did it last minute. I think it kind of took away from the finish, but I'll give him some slack there, poor guy. The other referee took a huge bump. He got dragged into that screen and just knocked out. So it was good, though. Overall, yeah, it didn't take away too much.
Yeah, that match to me was outstanding. I thought that, for me, I was saying to collab, I think that, I think the Men's Rumble was maybe a little bit better, but this, to me, was one of the best matches of the year so far. So kudos to both those guys. Roman Reigns just continues to surprise me every single feud that he's in, just continues to be that badass heel, and it's just been working. And kudos to WWE Creative for actually pulling the trigger on a Roman Reigns heel turn, because they didn't have the balls to do it with John Cena all those years before. So kudos to them for doing it with Roman Reigns. But now we got to go on to, of course, the big match, the main event, the Royal Rumble, the Men's Royal Rumble. What were your initial thoughts going into it? I know we all had different predictions. I had Randy. I think you had Brock Lesnar winning it. Your boy Keith Lee was not even in the match. To me, that was I think that was because of Mia Yim having COVID. But other than that, what were your initial thoughts on this match?
I liked it. It was okay. A little bit disappointed at some of the eliminations, like Big E doing all that. Like, they should have had like a bigger name take him out, not just almost pulling him over. I thought maybe he should have been in the final like two. Could have been him and Edge, and then after you have Edge eliminate him, then Randy comes out. But for the most part, I like the way that they brought out Damian Priest and made him look like a big deal when he eliminated Kane. I thought like the way they zoomed in on Kane and Damian Priest, they really sold that as being like a big moment for him. So that was good. Bobby Lashley and Big E going at it, that was good. They actually made them, even though they're mid-card champions, they made them look like they can actually win the match. They don't usually do that every year with the Intercontinental champ. They come in and 5 minutes later, they're gone. But yeah, Shinsuke looked really good in this, I thought. Daniel Bryan, for the most part, he's there almost half an hour. He looked amazing. The surprise entrance, like, it was great seeing Christian come back after all these years, and him and Edge. So it was a good match. I like the moments. Hurricane, I thought they could have had maybe Brock Lesnar, Wade Barrett, Adam Pearce, someone like that in the back, because we see Hurricane like every Rumble, and he does the same thing with a choke slam. Like, I like it, but if you do that every year, then it's going to lose like the popularity and the pop that he gets. So that was good to see Carlito, though. But other than that, I would have liked to seen like a guy like Wade Barrett, some of the other backstage agents, get involved in it.
Yeah, I agree there. Not a lot really to add. I mean, I did like, for the most part, I thought the entrants were fine. There were a couple guys that I was kind of head-scratching. Like, no offense to Dominic Mysterio. Like, I like him. He's been involved the last year, but I don't think he had any business being in the Royal Rumble. Even, like, King Corbin, to me, has been nowhere for so long. So when he was in the Rumble, I was kind of surprised, honestly. I was like, oh, like, wow. Like, they actually put him in the Rumble. Seeing Kane was a pleasant surprise. I actually thought he was done. I didn't see him being involved. But I think I would have rather have had Kane instead of Big Show. So that was good. But I agree with you in terms of Hurricane. Just like, it's getting to that point where we see him too often. And I would have even loved to have seen John Cena come out. I know, what's his name? Rosenberg. He's like, oh, John Cena's here. And I was like, okay, I hope they really don't show John. Like I really hope that's not like a, like, just they keep ruined the whole fucking like big surprise. So, but I would have loved to have seen John Cena in this match. I'll say it again. Braun Strowman at number 30, very underwhelming. I thought Brock Lesnar and The Fiend were going to be involved in this match 100%. They were not in it. Nowhere to be found. So that to me was disappointing. But man, come on. Christian and Edge hugging each other, that was nuts. That was absolutely incredible. That was a tearjerker moment for me because, like, you could tell that the WWE superstars, when that happened, like, they didn't touch them. They didn't bother them. They got their hug. They got their moment. That was very heartwarming for me. To me, Otis getting eliminated as quick as he did was funny. He's I feel so bad for him. He went from being, Mr. Money in the Bank, potentially having a future and being a future champion, to now just becoming a joke at this point. One of my favorite segments in the Rumble was Matt Riddle and Daniel Bryan going face-to-face when they were chopping each other and just going hard. But my favorite part in this, believe it or not, I want to say was Damian Priest showing. Like, that just shows that it doesn't matter, like, if there's surprises, if it's all SmackDown guys, all Raw, there's always going to be one guy that just comes in and just surprises. And Damian Priest was that guy this time around. Remember all those years ago when Bo Dallas interfered? Not interfered. Remember when he came in the Rumble and he eliminated Wade Barrett? That was like, oh my God, that's a huge moment. Kudos to Damian. And again, Damian Priest eliminating Kane? Kane is the guy that he runs the Royal Rumble every single year. So kudos to him. Kudos to WWE for giving the green light on Damian Priest. We all know he absolutely debuted the next night. So he is now going to be a main event guy. Maybe not main event, but he's a main roster guy now. So I'm happy with that. And Alino, I'm surprised you didn't even mention the dominance of Bobby Lashley. It took four guys to eliminate him. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, him and Big E, like, if that's a match, like, if they were on the same brand, I thought that would have been money for the IC title. That's like one of the things where it's too bad Bobby Lashley's a U.S. champ on Raw, because I think just their interaction in that match, it felt like a big deal. So if they hold the title now for another 8 or 9 months, maybe Survivor Series, when they do that brand versus brand thing, could be the two longest mid-card champs going at it. But yeah, Bobby Lashley, I was surprised he lasted that long in there. I thought he would be out like 5 minutes in. They probably would have like The Miz come out and him and Daniel Bryan would go out, and you see Daniel Bryan eliminate all these guys like Bobby Lashley and Big E and then go to The Miz and build up his numbers that way. But surprised he was in there that long, and good showing for him.
What do you think is next for Bobby? Because I said to Collab, like, just based off of how they built Bobby yesterday or 2 days ago and how, like, strong, like, he threw Dominic out. Like this was not an elimination. This was like he just sent a message. He threw him out of the ring, threw him like nothing. And I think this might I'm not going to, I don't want to get your hopes up because you've been saying this for like 2 years, but I get this hunch that just the way that they've built Bobby Lashley, at this point, you have to go with Lashley versus Brock Lesnar. Like if he comes back, especially now with Brock not being in the Rumble and not winning, like, you know, not becoming the number one contender, at least not yet. Why not? But like, I feel like that wouldn't really harm anybody. You have Bobby Lashley, you lose the title to maybe Mustafa Ali, and you have Mustafa Ali versus maybe Kofi Kingston for the U.S. title. And then you can go with Bobby Lashley versus Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. Yes, there won't be a lot of fans, but for a lot of casuals who have watched MMA, that'll definitely get some tickets. That'll get some sales for sure.
Yes, but like you said it there too, like I think Bobby has to lose a title because if you have him and Brock for nothing and then that mid-card title would kind of take away. But I think Big E also, or not Big E, Keith Lee is going to be the deciding factor because with Drew, you don't know what's going to happen with him right now. Sheamus, you don't know what's going to happen with him. I think if Keith Lee and Brock are still in the same show, that might be the direction. Brock goes into the chamber and challenges Roman after. That could be another way. So depending on what happens this next month, I wouldn't mind seeing that for this WrestleMania. Have that on night one. And then night two, you can close out with the championship matches. And you have Brock main event one. Maybe even if it's Keith Lee, you can have them two go at it. Or if he faces Bobby Lashley, there's another attraction for either night. So I think this is the year to do it if they go in that direction with him.
Well, now I just want to quickly talk about the winner. We got Edge actually coming out on top, winning the Royal Rumble, coming out number one and going the distance. We all know Seth Rollins made his return as well at 29. That was absolutely hilarious. He waits outside the ring and then throws out Daniel Bryan. That would have got, if there were fans there, that would have got a lot of boos. I was kind of pissed off, actually. I thought Bryan, he was like my second pick to win. I had Randy initially winning and then Daniel Bryan. And of course, Randy Orton comes out after Edge eliminates Rollins, gives him the RKO, and then Edge does his best Del Rio impression. And it looks like he's going to get eliminated by Randy. And then he just turns around and throws Randy over. I guess I'll ask this question. Between Drew McIntyre and Roman Reigns, who is the better fit for Edge?
I think Roman, just because he's really the heel and he's on SmackDown and it's a title Edge never won before. He can go challenge him, take back his title and show, and if you want to go in that route. But I still think Randy might sneak his way back into a title, even though they had the match on Raw to kind of make you think like, okay, this whole feud's done. They're going with The Fiend. I think Sheamus and Drew are going to get involved too much. And then after Sheamus might cost him the title down the road because there's still two more pay-per-views to go. And Randy's picking up momentum. I think Randy's going to take the belt. The Fiend will be waiting till after WrestleMania to swoop in there. And we'll have Randy and Edge close out one of the nights of WrestleMania.
Yeah, see, that's what I was saying too. Like, I love Drew. I think his run has been great. But I think there's just way too much riding on Randy right now. Like he's in a feud with The Fiend. He's been feuding with Alexa Bliss, feuding with Edge. Like this all just screams main event. And I think Randy Orton, he deserves another title run. And if that means that Sheamus costs Drew McIntyre the match, or you have maybe The Miz somehow cash in, win the title, and then you have Randy Orton, you know, beat The Miz. Like even like this could all happen before WrestleMania. So there's a lot of questions on Raw, but if Edge were to go to SmackDown and face Roman Reigns, I don't see Edge beating Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. I just do not see it happening. Like, and again, I'm the biggest Edge fan. I'm the biggest Edge head going. He's my favorite wrestler ever. So, as well, I was talking about this with Collab yesterday. What does this mean now with Seth Rollins coming back? I mean, does he go up against Big E for the Intercontinental title? Does he step up and turn face and face Roman Reigns? I really have no idea what the direction they're going with Seth Rollins. I know if they do Seth versus Big E for the IC title, that elevates the title to almost main event status. So if they want to do that, that's an option. But what do you think is going to be next for Seth Rollins?
Yeah, I think the Intercontinental title, I think him and Big E, they're going to pick up that NXT feud they had and probably see Daniel Bryan involved with those two guys, maybe a triple threat, or if they want to go Shinsuke versus Seth Rollins, you have Daniel Bryan and Big E. But I think maybe those four guys are going to probably be involved at some point. Maybe they'll do that as a multi-man for that title, but I think that's maybe where Seth is going to probably drop to. I don't see him going after Roman. I think he was going to go after Roman. He probably would have won the Royal Rumble, and then they could have done it. But since he took out Daniel Bryan and they had those interactions throughout the match, I think he's still going to be a heel for the next while, maybe the next few months.
Do you see them going with Seth Rollins versus Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania, or do you think they would do the lazy approach and do like the six-man ladder match for the IC title? Like, I really have no idea, because like I feel like Seth is way better than that, putting him and Bryan and Big E like in a six-man IC title like ladder match. I feel like they would be pissed off, but I would not be surprised, man. Like, we've seen it before. I think they've done that three times at WrestleMania. Do you see them doing that, or do you think they'd kind of leave Big E as the IC champ and maybe have Seth versus Bryan in a singles match at Mania?
I'd be good with both outcomes. Maybe if they do similar to what they do with Finn Balor, Miz, and Seth Rollins when they had that triple threat to open the show. I think they'll do something like that, where they'll have like a fatal four-way, open the show, have the longest match of the night, and then set the tone for the rest of it. Or they might split them up. You'll have Seth Rollins versus Daniel Bryan, and then Big E taking on maybe Apollo Crews and Shinsuke in a triple threat. But like, I think you have to have those guys involved in the mid-card title for it a little while, because with Roman as champ, you want to have like some sort of long-term storyline plan if he's going to drop the title.
I agree with that 100%. That is it for wrestling. I got to now go to a negative approach. And we really, it's tough to talk about, because, you know, athletes, they get disappointed all the time. They get frustrated. You know, they sometimes see red with teammates. Sometimes they see red with opponents. But with this unfortunate scenario, Tony D'Angelo on the New York Rangers defenseman last year, I believe he had 53 points. He had a great year last year. Unfortunately, he has, you know, he's a hothead. He has a lot of history. You know, he's fought refs, fought management, fought his own teammates in practice. But this time around, it just got too far. I mean, on Saturday night, Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins, they beat the Rangers in a barn burner. I think it was 5-4 in overtime in New York. Georgiev and D'Angelo, they had a miscommunication behind the net that caused the game winner. And of course, when you get frustrated, sometimes, you know, your emotions get the best of you. Tony D'Angelo made a stupid, sarcastic comment to him, and Georgiev was just like, screw this, I'm going to hit him. He hits him. I think Chris Kreider was the teammate that broke it up. And it's gotten so bad in the last couple weeks with even the productivity of the New York Rangers. Like, Lafreniere has been struggling. Zibanejad has been struggling. Do you think D'Angelo's negativity, do you think it's actually affected the team for the whole season? Because I'm kind of getting that vibe now. So, I mean, the GM said enough is enough. You're not playing another game in a Rangers uniform. But I'll start with this. First of all, what is next for the New York Rangers roster? And what is next for Tony D'Angelo as an individual athlete?
Oh, yeah, it's not looking good, especially with the way he like got out of the lineup and the way they kind of got rid of him. That means it's been a long-term thing. It's probably been happening more than one season, and I think this was just the final straw here, and the GM came out and said he's not playing anymore, so I think this has probably been ongoing. If it was like a one-time thing, I think they would have let it slide, but for like teammates to get involved and then Kreider to come in, like, and they're siding with the goalie, so it's like they already know that he's really the problem, and I think they dealt with it the right way. It's just now I think he's done in the NHL. I think no one's going to touch him this year for sure, so he's going to have to go to the KHL if he wants to play and build a reputation over there, because like, even though he scored 50 points, he's not going to be someone they're just going to willingly accept. He's not really that game breaker. He's not the best defenseman in the league by far. So if he was that, they might take a chance and look the other way. But with everything that happened, I think it's going to be a while before we see him back.
Yeah, I also think there's a level of respect too, like in the NHL and in any sport. Like you know, you see guys like Shea Weber who just played his 1,000th game. He's one of the most respected guys to ever play the game. Everybody loves Shea Weber. Like there's one scenario where like there's Shea Weber, the hockey player, you don't want to mess with him. But then there's Shea Weber off the ice, and he's probably one of the most respected guys. If he's going to reach out and give you advice on any sort of hockey tips, you are definitely going to take it from a guy like Shea Weber. But then there's guys like Tony DeAngelo, and you just look at just like he started out in Tampa Bay, and he got drafted there. And I knew right away that something was off because they like, first of all, you get rid of Sergachev, and that's huge. I mean, you get rid of Drouin and you get Sergachev. So I feel like from the get-go, there was something wrong with DeAngelo early on in his career. I remember when he got drafted, too, they were mentioning he got into, I think, two fights that year with refs in the OHL. So this has been happening for a long time. And I feel like, in terms, like you said, I don't think a lot of NHL teams are going to look at him just based off of his history and the lack of respect that he has for others. And I just feel like, when it comes to being a pro athlete, that is one of the big attributes you need to have. You need to have respect for your teammates, for the management, for your coaches, and especially for your goalie, because we all know that if there's a scrum in front of the net, the first person to, you know, remove the opponent is the defenseman. He's usually the guy that pulls the guy away. So I feel like if let's say they let this slide and he were to play another game, I feel like he definitely would not have the goalies back. He would ease up on competition. I just feel like it would have been a train wreck. So kudos to the GM there for putting his foot down. I'm not surprised that a lot of people were saying, were you surprised that he cleared waivers? Not surprised at all, just based, again, off the respect level. It's unfortunate that they signed him to a $9.6 million contract extension, I think in October. Very unfortunate for them, but it does happen. And this sport is unpredictable. But again, I'll ask, do you think that he actually affected this team so far this season? Because guys like Kapokako, guys like Zibanejad, they have been struggling.
Yeah, he's not probably the leader material. He's not going to be an assistant captain or captain. So I think probably in practice, who knows, it probably was even worse. Probably like the stuff you hear when Mike Babcock gets fired and all of a sudden all these stories come out about him, how he wasn't this great coach that everyone painted him out to be. So maybe with DeAngelo in a week or two, we'll probably see teammates come out and say, you know what, like it affected our morale. It made some of the guys just not want to play as hard because they had this guy in the dressing room that was just affecting the team's overall play. So I think that has something to do with it. And maybe now that he's off the team, they don't have to worry about his antics even off the ice and him being a little bit too outspoken at times in social media. They can just focus on playing and getting the best out of their team. So it'll probably be the best thing for them right now, even though he had 50 points the other year, but I don't think they really need that right now.
I was also going to say it really pains me too, because we just saw the New York Rangers. They basically did a full 180. When you think of like leadership on the team, they really got, they have a youth movement now in New York, like Panarin. He's not young, but he's a fresh face. Zibanejad, he's been there, I think, 4 years, but he's really, really just started to elevate his game. Then you look at the back end. I mean, Mark Stahl is gone. Ryan McDonough's gone. Dan Girardi's gone. All these great leaders. And then, of course, the biggest leader of all time in that organization, at least of our existence, Henrik Lundqvist, is gone. So now there's that lack of respect in the dressing room. There's that questionable loyalty, questionable leadership. And, you know, you have guys like Adam Fox who are just starting to get their feet wet in the league. They're making a name for themselves. You have Jacob Trouba who, again, he's gone in arbitration year after year, but I feel like he's not as good of a leader as expected to be. So I think it's just gotten to that point in New York where they need to find their true leader. Even another guy, Ryan Callahan, he left as well. So they need to start figuring out who the true leaders are on this team. For me, the first guy that comes to mind is Chris Kreider. I think he's probably the main leader right now when I look at the roster. Him, Ryan Strome has been around for a while. I mean, he's not a sexy player or anything, but I really do think that you have a guy like like a Brandon Lemieux. Like he puts it on every single night. He's a guy that will defend his teammates. He's not the best skater, not the best scorer, but he's a great leader, I think, at least in the locker room. So with this happening with D'Angelo, and just based off of him having a 50-point year, I think it's also his ego. I think when you have as great a campaign as he did last year, it starts getting in your head where it's like, yeah, you know what? They just signed me 2 years, bridge deal. I'm going to get a long-term extension here. I'm the number one offensive defenseman on this team. And I think it hit them all at once. And of course, when you're playing at MSG, one of the brightest lights in all of sports, that's also going to affect your ego, right? So, I mean, kudos to the GM for really saying, you know what, enough is enough. We have another guy up and coming in Adam Fox. He's going to be our number one power play quarterback now, not you. So get out of the door. To me, this kind of relates. I want to talk quickly before we get off the air. I want to quickly talk about respect again in this league. About 2 weeks ago, we saw Keith Yandle. He wanted to sit out, and we were all kind of like, this is off. There's something wrong here. There's something that we're not being exposed to. There's another story here. And of course, John Quenneville being the respected coach and the great bench leader that he is, he finally realizes that, okay, we have a guy that's played for Team Canada time and time again. He's an Iron Man. He doesn't want to miss games for his team. We're going to put him back in the lineup. And again, when you talk about a guy like Keith Yandle, who's been in the league 10 plus years, he is so respected that even if there is a story about that he wants to sit out, you have guys like Ekblad, you have guys like Barkov and Huberto who are accepting of his, you know, displeasure. But at the same time, he's respected enough in the locker room where teammates will be like, yeah, you know, he was frustrated, but it's Keith Yandle. We need him in our lineup. We respect the shit out of him. He's been here for so long. And that is where it's the exact opposite of Tony D'Angelo, where you look at him, he's played amazing the last 2 years, but the leadership is just non-existent. So do you agree with me when I think of the story with Keith Yandle and D'Angelo and respect, or do you think there's maybe another element to it as well?
Yeah, I agree. I think maybe, like in D'Angelo's case, maybe he kind of felt entitled a bit. He's like, I'm putting up these numbers. I got a little bridge deal here. It's only a matter of time. After this season, I can renegotiate for a long-term big money deal. So probably was a little bit of ego into it and probably thought long-term, I'm going to be the face of this team defensively. Like, I'm going to be the mainstay. And guys like Joe Georgiev and other guys are just going to be in and out, probably traded after a year. So I think he played that card, looking at the morale of the group and thinking, oh, I'm more valuable to this team than the backup goalie on paper. So I think that probably had something to do with it.
Yeah, I really hope that no NHL team takes him. I'm not trying to bash down D'Angelo as a person, but he really has a lot of growing up to do. So I hope that there's really no other team out there that will take him. I don't think there's another team out there that'll take him other than maybe a Detroit or an Ottawa, just a team that's desperate for any offensive weapon they can get. But I'll quickly bring up COVID-19 in the NHL and then we'll end it. We have seen a lot of different cases. Actually, there was a scary incident the other day for New Jersey. Andreas Johnsson, Michael McLeod, Pavel Zacha, and I think Mackenzie Blackwood all had to go into COVID-19 protocol, and they played the day before. So I think 10 New Jersey Devil players are all in COVID-19 protocol right now. Alino, with all of this going on and the constant COVID, you know, protocols that guys like, you know, we've seen Aho go through it. We've seen Teravainen go through it. We've seen DeBrincat go through it. Do you think that the league is going to postpone the playoffs, or do you think everything's going to run smoothly moving forward?
It's going to be tough. It might be a little bit of both because, like, I saw this in the MLS too. Like, before they had their return to play, it was the MLS's back tournament. Some teams couldn't even go because so many guys had COVID. So after the tournament, they kind of redid, like, the scoring structure. They based it on games played and divided that, and I guess that determined the standings. So I think they might do something similar in the NHL. Maybe if a team plays 50 games, it'll be weighted differently than a team who plays 54 games. But they should probably look into doing like bubble sites, like do a Canadian bubble for 3 weeks, let's say, you get 10 games out of it. And then after that 10 games, you have a week off to quarantine, do the All-Star game, and maybe come back to it. But I don't see them having a full season if they're going to postpone games like this. They might even have to put the playoffs if they... I know they want to have 82 games next year, but if they see that they want to have the playoffs as is, they might even have to extend the season for a month. So that might put their plans a little bit off if they want to have that. But yeah, I just don't see them all playing a 56-game season when you have to postpone 5 or 6 games because of COVID.
Yeah. Well, that's it for this week. We talked about the Royal Rumble. We talked about the problems with Tony D'Angelo and the lack of respect that he has in the league. Talking about respected guys like Shea Weber and Keith Yandel, regardless of, you know, their frustrations, they'll always be respected in this league. They've built a resume enough to be respected, so we respect those. And then, of course, we talk about this stupid disease in COVID-19 that, of course, it's going to slow down leagues, but hopefully it doesn't postpone them. Thanks, guys. That is In the Zone this week. This is Giancarlo Aulino and Chris Martelli signing off.